Typically, Rabbi Bless would be the one who would be moderating, but he's not here, and so I guess it will be.
He sent us in his place. What can I tell you?
Sorry, Rabbi Cohen and I. So the truth of the matter is I think we mentioned this last time. If it's a shaila of piskei halacha, of psak halacha, so that you ask your rabbanim and whatnot. This question and answer is, I think, more geared towards hashkafa or outlook or inyane, life, and that really is I think the questions that we're going to be dealing with. So please ask away. So who wants to go first?
Both of you are in positions of big hashpahs, rabbanim and rebbeim. I was wondering how you balance the sense of anava and also the sense of ambition. Like on one hand, you want to be modest, on the other hand, you want to have a big hashpah, and you probably be there, you have capabilities of doing so.
Okay. First of all, it's nice to do this again. We did it last June, I think, right? So it's nice to be around chevra who are spending their time in a nice, warm beis medrash, literally warm beis medrash. But seriously, continuing to learn and to push yourselves. Now, when chevra is starting to, get ready to have fun, and I'm going to have fun too, and it's important to take a break also. But you should give yourselves yeshikoyach for continuing to push during this time. So it's a chus for us to be here with you. I hear what you're saying, Yoni. It's a fair question. I think that when I'll just talk personally, when you're younger, in these positions, first time you become a rabbi or an assistant rabbi or whatever, and you get to like stand by the shtender, and you get to like people wait for you to at the end of Shema and things like that. And when you're like first starting that, there's like a little like, wow, that's cool. Like you're in that spot. Like that's a pretty, like, wow. I remember like when I went on my first interview for my first job, in a shul, and I was like, they wanted me to sit like the rabbi's chair. I was like, wow, like cool. But after like pretty quick, I felt like you realized that you're just, if you're in these jobs to feel like special and that you have kavod, etc., then you're not gonna feel good pretty quickly, because it doesn't really there are outer trappings at times. Guys stand up and it's nice, and we should do that for kavod Torah, but in the end of the day, I feel like you can catch up to yourself pretty quickly on it, and you catch yourself like we all do. Every person in any job, person's a doctor, person's a lawyer, person's a person's a hush of a guy in yeshiva. I think when we have those moments of thinking about ourselves, I was like, wow, we can think it's great, Baruch Hashem, I'm put in position to do important things, and that's great. But I think we pretty quickly, you kind of remind yourself, like, if you think that you're here because you deserve it or because you you're not gonna do your job well. Right? Because then it becomes about you instead of being about the people that you're here to work with and to partner with and to help. So I think that's sort of the way I work around it. Doesn't mean that you don't ever have those thoughts. I think every person does. I think we're honest with ourselves. We all do at some time. But if we recognize what we're here to do and to think that, and I'll tell you another thing. I never thought when I was living yeshiva I'd be in any of the positions that I'm in now. They happen because of all kinds of interesting hashkacha pratis that brings a person to different parts in their life. I consider it very big as a chus. And I'll tell you one thing that makes it easier also. When you work here, it makes it very easy to feel small. You're around, the fact that I even go to meetings every once in a while, and that Rav Shechter is there and Rav Olig is there, it's a pretty easy sell to feel like to be in your place. And I've learned a lot from watching my rebbeim and how they conduct themselves. And recognizing, so a person who's mechabed other people is a person who's really worth getting covered, not the person who's looking to pull all into themselves. So when I, if you get a moment like that and you think about that for a second, you can usually remind yourself of what you're here to do. You have tafki, you have something you're supposed to do. And as long as people feel that you're being successful, so then good, you continue to do that. But otherwise, you're here to do what the Baruch Shalom has asked you to do.
Just on one point that Rabbi Kron mentioned, this last point, I mean, everything you said was fantastic. But at the end of the day, you know, the covet is one of those inyanim that no one is detached from. And one of the ways to really fight the taiva of covet is to be a Talmud. You know, is to still feel like you're a Talmud continuing to learn. In other words, if a Rav is not learning, so then you want to stay away from that person. If a Rebbe is still not learning, in other words, he always has to speak to his Rebbeim. He always has to figure out ways of getting better, of continuing to steig. You know, at the end of the day, we're all going to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it could very well be that the person that was sitting in the chair listening to the shir from the Rebbe is going to have a higher place in the Olam HaEmes than the Rebbe giving the shir. And therefore, it behooves us to continue to steig, continue to grow, continue to develop. It's a very, very important idea. We can never stop continuing to learn and to grow.
If you just spend your time in the Rabbanus or in Chinuch or whatever that Klei Kodesh position is, just unloading the things that you learned once, you're going to be running on empty pretty quickly. I mean, if you're not continually filling yourself up, then you're not going to be able to do your job. I'll tell you one vision I have, one like picture I always have in my head, is the picture of Rabbi Yudin coming to ask shalas to Rav Shechter. I see it all the time. Rabbi Yudin coming to Beis Medrash to sit with Rav Shechter, and he would sit with a notebook. Rabbi Yudin was in the Rabbanus for 50 years. I think 50 years. And I remember watching Rabbi Yudin come into Beis Medrash, sit down with Rav Shechter, who is not so much older than him. I don't even know the difference in age. And watching him take notes. You know, he'd done a few things already by that point. And I think that's it's a very important in how everybody submits to me.
Over Shavuos, we had a Q&A with the Kolos and Kolayim members, and someone asked them what their ha'aros were over their years at yeshiva. And one of them mentioned that they realized that nowadays guys are starting to date much earlier. I want to know what the Mashgiach would talk about that.
So the true matter is, I mean, the Gemara itself says, you know, Chanoch l'nar al pi darko. In other words, as to when is that time period that a person is supposed to be dating. So, you know, it really depends upon the person. Everybody has different circumstances and different taivas and different desires and different hergashos and different she'ifos. So, you know, it's definitely every person is different. But with that being said, it also is very important that regardless of whatever age a person starts to date, they have to be on a solid footing, meaning they have to know who they are, and they have to feel good about where they are, and they have to have worked on themselves and really ironed out some basic kinks before they start introducing another person. I mean, you know, imagine a person who has a problem with kaas, with anger, and this is something that he just left dormant for all these years that he was in yeshiva, never really working on that specific midah, and now he's going to start going out and dating, and everything's going to be nice, and then the first time something happens that triggers him, I mean, he's going to be filled with rage. So, you know, it's very important that regardless of... It could be that there's a 20-year-old who has been working on himself for the last 10 years, trying to become a person who takes his, you know, his himself not seriously, but his work and working on himself seriously. And he was doing that for 10 years, and now he's someone that's ready to be a no-sane and ready to be makabel, because in a marriage, you have to give and you also have to accept. When I say accept, tochacha. That's just, you know, that's the reality. I mean, you know, you marry a wife and you accept an ol, and that's a good thing. You know, we women keep us, our wives keep us focused and grounded and rooted in what's real and important. But you have to be someone who is able to accept that. So you have to, on one hand, be selfless. You have to be a no-sane. But on the other hand, you also have to be a makabel. And for a person to do that, so they've had to have been working on themselves for a number of years to get to that point. So it could be you have a 24-year-old who just started working on himself last year, and then you have a 20-year-old that's been working on those midos for 10 years. So in terms of whether which one is ready before the other, it could be the 20-year-old is more ready than the 24-year-old. Again, with that being said, obviously there's also familial, you know, there's family considerations as well. When parents, that's a discussion that every person has to have with his family, with his parents, and, you know, really to go through that idea. But assuming everything equal, that support is not an issue and that, you know, his parents are okay with it. So now you have to see where you're holding as a person, whether you're ready for such a daunting, unbelievable, that's what it is. It's an unbelievable responsibility. It looks very nice. It's so cool. You know, it's great. I get to, you know, finally be with my sister, even though it's not. It's my lady friend, but, you know, I don't have to now say it's my sister anymore. I can say it's my girlfriend. But the truth of the matter is those are, you know, once you put on the ring and say I am a Kedesh Li, it's a totally different reality. And that's something that, you know, hopefully is forever. And you really have to work on yourself to make it, you know, really great. So the answer is if early. But he's been working on himself. He's someone who's mature emotionally. Then if that's something that he's ready for and he's prepared for, as long as he knows going in what it entails, then so be it.
I don't know if I agree with that assumption that guys are dating younger now than they ever were. I think that we always had, when I was dating here in Yeshiva, you had the same exact thing. We had the excitement of the you know, it's so important. It is so important not to get caught up in the excitement of getting engaged and getting married. Getting engaged and getting married is easy. Being married is really serious business. And I think that every single guy, if you're considering starting to date, you need to have a Rebbe that you talk to. Somebody that you speak to who is older than you, who has more experience than you, who understands you, who can you can talk to, not going to dictate to you and tell you, good, now you can date. That's a conversation with you about who you are and what you're ready for. And I think one of the mistakes that guys do make is they hear the noise, everybody's, and you know, everybody and their mother's telling them about ideas, and they're texting you a million ideas and resumes and all that stuff. You go to weddings, it gets exciting, and I'm like, okay, now I get everyone telling me that I'm ready, so I guess I'm ready. There is nobody who should tell you that you're ready, except for you. And that takes a responsibility, it takes a maturity to sit down and have a conversation with someone who understands you, someone who can talk to you calmly, and can close out the noise and help you decide if you think this is something you're ready to take on with all the ideas, all the details that Simon pointed out. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes, that guys just start getting ideas from their friends without ever speaking to someone and getting a real calm, thoughtful, you know, having a calm, thoughtful conversation. I think it's really the most important thing.
To pick up back to the first question for a minute, the Mashgichim mentioned about always learning from Rebbeim. So who are the Mashgichim's Rebbeim and other role models? And what is one thing that they taught the Mashgichim that would be very important advice for us?
I have a number of Rebbeim, mainly in this yeshiva, who were my Rebbeim. I was Rebbe Tversky's here for almost my entire time undergraduate, when I was undergraduate. I learned from Rebbe Simon for 2 years when I was in Smicha. I spent time learning Rebbe Willick. And each one of them have taught me different things. Rebbe Tversky taught me the Mida of Anivus, not that I pretend to exemplify the Mida of Anivus that Rebbe Tversky does, But to watch Rabbi Tversky close the Gemara, you know those famous stories of Chaim? You guys in the shiur, you probably know already. Right? We started a shiur once, 3 minutes in. Guy raised his hand and said, Rashi would say, not like that. And Rabbi said, close the Gemara, and the shiur was over. It was like astounding to me to watch the midos of Rabbi Tversky and his midos MS also, which I can't, try to compare it to, but it was a very, very powerful experience, spending time speaking to Rabbi Tversky and learning from him. Rabbi Simon taught me, above all else, the importance of knowing all the shitos. Emphasize it all the time. You got to know all the shitos. Why? Because there's going to be scenarios where someone's not following your ideal shita, and it's so important in the rabbinate to know all the shitos, because then you can help people navigate, you know, challenging scenarios. Rabbi Willick just teaches us to. He's taught me a lot of anivas also, anivas in Yediyas HaTorah. When I think that I know something, I think I have a good svara, I think Rabbi Willick will remind me, you know, the minig is like this. Mishmaru says that, the minig is like this. That's what we do. I think I have a lot, and I go to different bayim for different things. But that's at least three of the lessons that I've learned from my rabbi.
So, in terms of, I never learned here in the yeshivas, but I happen to be very close with Rabbi Simon here on campus, and we speak a lot. But my rebbeim from I learned in yeshivas near Yisrael, and I still keep in touch with my rebbeim from yeshiva, from whether it's Rosh Ragi Neuberger, or occasionally Ritzu Berkowitz, or perhaps there's another Rav in Lakewood, Rav Avram Lefkowitz, who I'm very close with. He's a Rosh Kollel in Lakewood. But putting all that aside, those and obviously all those people were extremely helpful and beneficial to me getting to where, you know, I am today. And I have tremendous hakaras as well. But I can't emphasize enough how privileged I was to grow up in my parents' home. And those are really the people that that taught me in terms of midos. You know, midos, tovos, you know, are something. I mean, I remember so many life lessons that my parents taught and still taught, and I still go to my parents for advice and recommendations. As a parent to my children, I always have this inner voice. And I say, what would my parents do in this situation? How would they handle this scenario? My parents were just and are the most, Baruch Hashem, the most magnificent role models. My mother was a mechaneches she won awards for being a mechaneches of the highest caliber. She was actually my first grade mora, and if I was misbehaving, she would either hit me. In those days, she could hit me in class, or she sent me to the principal's office, and I heard about it at night, already from first grade. But she also knew, you know, when he needs a word of encouragement, and you know, my father, from a very, very young age. Torah learning was very, very important, and my father always paid extra for me and my brothers to have chavrusas in the yeshiva. So, you know, Baruch Hashem, you're all B'nai Torah, and you all have your rebbeim, and obviously you have to have your rebbeim, but don't be mevatel, don't poo-poo your parents. Your parents are extremely wise, and they were given a Bina Yisera, a tremendous Siyata Deshmaya in being able to raise you and get you to this point. None of you would be sitting here right now in a June's month even if your parents didn't want you to go to Eretz Yisrael. My mother probably still thinks I'm going to law school, and I'm 45 years old. You know, it's going on 46 soon. So, but at the same time, they got us to this point. And even if hashkafically they're different, at the or you're different. At the end of the day, the core mitos and the values. If you're here, that means because they gave you an appreciation for something, and they taught you how to distinguish between MS and Sheker, or else none of you would be here. If you didn't have that core mita of being able to distinguish MS from Sheker, you would not be here right now, and that's something that you learned from your homes. So every night you should be calling home. You should be saying thank you to your families, and don't be mevatel. Well, my rebbe's. In other words, when I'm speaking to my talmidim, I most times than not I'll always say, well, what do your parents say about this? Have you spoken to your parents? Perhaps speak to your parents, and if you don't understand what they're saying, maybe I can come in. I could help you understand a little bit from their vantage point. But perhaps working in conjunction with Rebbeim and parents, but that's a very, very important. So I think what Rabbi Krohn said, in terms of Rebbeim and perhaps also our families, they're beyond our greatest teachers.
I guess our yeshiva has a lot of really, really amazing things, but aside from being a Luchos yeshiva, but also being located in Washington Heights and the environment that entails, sometimes it can be hard to inculcate a sense of ruchnius that a lot of us felt in our yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not talking about Yedias HaTorah, I'm not talking about the Limud, I'm talking about a feeling of Dvekas Hashem and ruchnius. How do the Rebbeim feel that we can better inculcate that feeling and that sense of dvekus and spirituality, even in this type of environment?
Can't. I guess it's just no way. next.
Okay, I'll try. I think maybe what Samet meant is that... I wouldn't say that. I'll say what I think. I'll say what I think, to be honest. I any of the guys, you know, who I speak to, you guys know that I say that our goal, right, and this is not what you're saying, don't get me wrong, this is not, what I'm going to say now is not what you just said. Our goal, right, and many of us are more than a year back from Eretz Yisrael, right? When we come back from Eretz Yisrael, our goal is back to, we're having Friday night, I have 23 kids just came back from yeshiva. In our shul, so they come to our house Friday night. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to say to these kids. I just got back from Eretz Yisrael, right? So the number one thing that I always want, I think is important for a chaver to realize, and this is talking from somebody who felt exactly this way when I came back from Eretz Yisrael, is how can I, we always say, how can I hold on? In Eretz Yisrael I had, right, line them up. This, and I had this, and I had this. And here I don't have that. My goal when I come back to the United States is not to hold on, right? And you know that. I'm not telling somebody you don't know. Not to hold on. That's what I had, and just like get through and like hold on to all the stuff I got, because I got everything I'd ever need in Eretz Yisrael. Like I'm like a finished product, and I just come back to America to get broken up again. Right? That is not the pshat. And I went to Eretz Yisrael, and hopefully, if I'm lucky, right, and I worked hard, I gained a lot. And I learned about the things that mattered to me. And I come here, and now I have, instead of having one focus only, right, on learning only, so now I have a little bit of a wider focus. Now I have to also go to college, whatever reasons we're all going to college, and they come upon us, whatever reasons we feel hashkafically. But I've gained tools, right, through my learning, through my experience of Rebbeim, through my experience with Chaverim, through my experience in Ruchnius, that now put me in a position, yeah, here maybe it's a little more extreme from the things you see outside, especially in June's month, and July's month, and August's month, it's even worse, right? It's a little more extreme. But it, every place I'm placed by the Ribono Shel Olam is the place that I'm supposed to be, right? And it's my job, as long as I made a good cheshbon, that I am supposed to be here. And then that means automatically that he's placed me in this place to be over in that Nisayon. And to figure out, rather than spending time saying, ugh, I can't believe this place is not X, Y, and Z, which I can do. We can say that. And by the way, you can say that wherever you are. Everyone in every place has, I can't believe this place is not X, Y, and Z. Or I can say, I'm here already. So let me figure out what I'm going to do. So yeah, does it mean that I got to be careful where I walk? And yeah, okay, so maybe I do. Does it mean I need to like make more of a time to be to work on Shemiras Einayim specifically or other Shemiras that I need? Yes, maybe it provides that opportunity. Right, now that I have that Nisayon in front of me, it provides itself an opportunity. So I know it sounds like simple, but it sort of is that simple in a certain sense. It's not easy to do. Right? A lot of things are simple. They're not easy to accomplish. Right? But it's true. If I'm here, I made a cheshbon that I'm supposed to be here. So then there are certain Nisayonos that come with every situation that I'm in. Right? You're going to be out of here. You're going to be somewhere new. Right? You're going to get a job. You're going to be in Klei Kodesh. Whatever you're going to be doing, you're going to have those new Nisayonos. And now you have to deal with that. Right, wherever you're going to be, you're going to have those Nisayonos. And so your job is to say to yourself, okay, so I'm here. What, practically. And you have to lay out for yourself, what can I do to overcome those Nisayonos? What can I do to take advantage of the opportunities? And that might mean, right, vading with guys, talking to guys, talking to Rebbeim, figuring out what are we going to do to deal with X and Y and Z. And you said, rather than spending time hawking about how krum it is in this place, which is basically just is just self-defeating and becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Right, and now I don't have to succeed. Why? Because I'm in this defunct, difficult place. Right? We just do that to ourselves. So if instead I say, look, this Nisayon in front of me, let's go. Here we go. Let's figure it out. Right? Doesn't mean we need to do it perfectly, but we take that positive approach to it, which it's our choice. But if we take the more positive approach, you're just going to find out. I'm sure you guys all know. Chever who'd like to bash, and chever who'd like to just to do. Be a chever, be part of the chever who just does. Don't be part of the Chavrut Bashes. You're going to be much, much happier and you'll be more successful.
First, I just want to just be mosive on what Rick Rohn was saying. In other words, I don't think it really is a question of Washington Heights. I think it's just a universal question that, I mean, there are a lot of distractions. And really, the answer is those distractions they're always going to be here, regardless of where you are. Again, whether it's Washington Heights or whether it's Lakewood, whether it's in Baltimore.
And whether it's on your phone.
Whether it's in Eretz Yisrael, for sure. But in other words, and the Torah tells us how to, the Gemara tells us, right? Kodesh Baruch Hu, Barasi Yitzhara, Barasi Torah Tablet. I mean, it's, the only answer, I guess, is to, you know, it's an answer that probably no one just wants to hear. Okay, shkoyach, learning Torah is the answer to everything. How do somebody's sick learn Torah? Somebody is, you know, but Chazal tell us that. But I think at the end of the day, and this is really the point that I was trying to make earlier, is that the reality is we're going to fall and we're going to fail and it's going to be hard. But we just have to just get right back up and just go weiter. And then we're going to have a great learning day. And then tomorrow we're going to fail. And then we just got to get right back up and go weiter. In other words, it's a hard, worse than the Avera, and Rav Dessler speaks about this, worse than the Avera is the Totsah, is the result of the Avera. The Avera is an isolated event, but the Totsah, the result of that event is so much more destructive and devastating. So the reality is, and this is what I was saying before, it's, yeah, that just is. But you just have to just get back up and go weiter. And hopefully, you know, the next few minutes are going to be better than the last few minutes. And then tomorrow will be better than today. And hopefully if I pick up steam, mitzvah goreres mitzvah, and avera goreres avera, but you hope that there are more mitzvos that will build momentum and steam. You know, the truth of the matter is, and this is just in general about the Yetzer Hara, there's no such thing as, let me just get my fix today, and then let me get it out of my system, and then I'm going to be much better. In other words, it's like feeding a hungry dog, right? In other words, Oyv kesef, lo yispa kesef. Mana, you have 100, you want, you know, masayim, 200. So there's no such thing as saying, all I need is this, and then I'm going to be done. It doesn't work like that. So really, what you really have to do is if you really, really want to conquer this Yetzirah, and each of us have our own Yetzirah, you really have to go perhaps to an extreme look, you know, I pretty much haven't eaten cake in 5 years. It's true, by the way. And you would think, imagine what I would look like if I did eat cake. This is what I look like without eating cake. So I haven't eaten cake, cookies. I had a 2 month lapse, but that was with a chesron because I saw that I was still gaining weight without eating the cake. So I had to retrain my body like cake. But now I've been off it since Pesach. So in other words, it's basically 5.5 years minus about 2 months. No cake, no cookies, no potato chips, no corn chips, no soda, not even diet soda, nothing. Because there's no such thing as me eating just one piece of cake or one cookie. So I had to go to an entirely opposite extreme. And I say, Hashem, just give me pre-notice when I'm about to die. And I'm going to hoard. I'm going to eat intimates. That's what I'm going to do. But in other words, I had to go to an extreme because I don't have control. So, you know, sometimes also you have to go to an extreme in order to create. Again, you give a dog something, a hungry dog something to eat. You know, he's going to want more. You know what I mean? So, I don't know, just some thoughts.
Just to bounce off of what Rebbe was just saying.
About the antimens?
Yeah. How does one decide? It's easy to use an example regarding dating, but really anything, picking up another lima. How does one decide that he is ready to make this the next step? How does he decide if he's ready based on what Rebbe was talking about, succeeding and failing, versus someone that just is not good at something or just has a problem with something? How does one see if he is, you know, just trying and just fail sometimes and, like, he needs to work on himself and just build on himself in order to be better, or if he just, like, no, you're not ready, you need to stop first and then you can continue?
Do you mean, like, in terms of choosing a profession? Do you mean in terms of choosing
a profession? Dating another woman, how does one decide that they are ready based on things that they need to work on?
If I've failed so many times, like maybe it's just like not shaykh for me.
Yeah.
Right? How do you know to make that cheshbon?
Yeah.
I think in every area it's going to be different. Right? You're going to have to know what you're dealing with. Right? It's like guys ask, like, should I stay in learning, right, or should I get a job?
Right.
Right. So I think we have to be honest with ourselves. I think we also have to get Eitzah. I think we're not always going to know, you know, because you're right, I can just keep going, I can just keep trying, but I'm not really being that successful. So everyone has a certain amount of time which you spend in yeshiva just for our own personal growth, right? We're all going to learn when we leave yeshiva. But a person's going to ask that question, should I stay on learning? I think you have to talk to someone who knows learning, right? Same shiloh, a person's going to say, do I have what it takes, right, to be a Rebbe? I want to be a high school Rebbe, right? Some guys, like, it's just not for you. Right? Some guys, it's not their personality. Right? It's not going to work. Right? Some guys, we're dying. Why would you go be a, you know, go in finance? You should be a Rav, right? So it depends on the personality of the person. It depends on their kochos. And I don't expect that every guy's going to know when I'm 19 or 20 if I have those kochos or not. You know, I don't know about you. I didn't know for myself. I had people who told me. If, you know, maybe you should consider. I didn't even think it for myself. I said, maybe you should consider. Because you don't, at that stage, a lot of times you don't know. And you need someone who has some more expertise than you to know if it's something you should consider or not. And I think that's totally fair. Start talking to people who, and it depends on what the issue is. Dating, so speak to people who are more expertise, have more expertise in dating. If it's going to be Parnassa, speak to someone. Should I go to law school or should I not? Right? Speak to someone who's been to law school. Right? It sounds obvious, but guys sometimes don't make that established. Take the time to speak to people. It's such a valuable thing to learn from people who have more experience than you. Talk to older guys, talk to adults, talk to experts. It's a really great way to figure out. When I was trying to figure out I was going to be a psychologist or a rabbi, I didn't know what I was going to do exactly. So I just started talking to people. So was it some psychologists? Was it some rabbinums? The more I spoke to other people, the more I started to reflect, like, can I be like that? Is that something? I'm not going to be like them, but right? could I be like that, or is that not shayach for me? And I think that the more you get some guidance, then you can make your own personal decision. But I think that's one important avenue.
I don't think I have anything to add. But I, you know, just I guess just to echo Rabbi Krohn, also, you know, a lot of this, if not all of this, is siyata d'shmaya. In other words, and like Rabbi Krohn mentioned a little while ago, like in every matzav you're going to be in, you really just have to be mispalat to Hashem that he gives you the siyata d'shmaya. And it could very well be you're going to pick a profession and you're going to realize it's not for you, and you're going to go back to school or change professions. For me, I'm much lazier than, you know, Rabbi Krohn. I just figure out, you know, let's just figure it out on the fly type of person. Would you disagree with that?
No, that's that. Right, yeah.
So, that's essentially been my entire life is just figuring it out on the fly, and just davening, just literally davening to Hashem, and Baruch Hashem, you know, so far so good, but you know, Kodesh Baruch Hu steers us. There have been many, many situations in my life where you mamish saw the Yad Hashem that you think you're going this way, and then he ends up redirecting you for events that just, wow, or just people you encounter, or just life's experiences. I mean, I was so fortunate that I had a rav of my shul growing up in Miami Beach, Florida, that had made such a profound impact that, to me, from the time I was in 10th grade, I wanted to go into the rabbonis. You know, that was something that I wanted to do, and just to, along the way, the, you know, different people and yeshivas, you know, every step of the way was just one thing led to another. But the true matter is the answer is Rabbi Krohn's way is for sure a correct mahalak for 99.9% of the people. And then there's some other people that just, you know what, it's like, you know, like LeBron James, he throws the white powder up in the air, you know, see where it lands. So I guess my life has been, let's see where it lands.
Yeah.
What's the Mashgichim's mahalach, or maybe an itza, or when, you know, you're going through, you know, something difficult, or there's an Indian that's difficult in your life, and trying to, like, materialize bitachon, and to, like, really feel that. It's easy in general, you know, when nothing's happening. When there's something that's problematic, you don't exactly know where it's going. You know, those are the moments where it's hardest, and you also lose the most when you need it. Do you have any, like, itzas on, you know, what to do in those moments?
Can you tell me that one?
Rav Ezra Shapiro in Shalvim, he once said that's so important to, when you're in a bitachon moment, that is not the moment to work on bitachon. Because you, at that moment, you have to rely on your reserves, right? So his greatest ha'ara to me in this area was, when you're not in that moment, that is the time to be learning Shara Bitachon, L'chavos L'vavos. That's the time to be learning Emunah Bitachon L'chazon Ish. Do it when you're not feeling the Hisrashlos in Bitachon. That is the time to work on it. And if you do, and you... If anyone's ever learned Shara Bitachon, it is not that complicated, to be honest, right? It's fairly easy to learn. But it's mechazik in you a certain outlook on life, a certain hashkafas l'chaim. And if you're mechazik that in yourself over time, and that means taking 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day with a chavrusa, really learning in Yonah Bitachon, then when you find yourself in that moment, it doesn't mean everything's going to be fine, but it means you have what to work with. If we wait until we hit that moment, then we're so a mess that learning bitachon, it's not theory, it's practice, and I can't handle it, and it's too much, right? So that's one ha'ara. It's just, and I would encourage everybody to spend time. I think one thing will be true, things that are earlier than they used to be, I think life is more anxiety-inducing today than it was when I was in yeshiva. That I think is true. So I think that taking the time now, when you're not, if you're not feeling quite as anxious or quite as worried about things, to learn those svarim, I would absolutely do it right now. That's one really important thing to do. What was the? I'm gonna stop there. You have something to say?
Oh, you said.
Hey, Shalom Aleichem. How's it going? Yes. Yeah, come on in. You have something to say?
No, perfect.
No.
Okay. Brilliant.
That doesn't answer for what to do when we're feeling. I'll tell you what I do. When I'm having hard days, I learn Ali Shur, Chelik Aleph, Yemei Av, Yemei Sina. The days when you're feeling like, so you go back to Ali Shur, that it's like the fourth piece in Ali Shur Chelik Aleph, Yemei Av, Yemei Sina, where he basically just says, like, if you're feeling horrible and you think that you can't learn, you can't daven, you can't, and I'm like a nobody, don't worry, Rabbeinu Yonah also felt that way sometimes, and he tells you that's normal. And it validates you. It's a little validation. So I do that also. That's a way of kind of like calming down, taking a deep breath. And I'll tell you one last thing. One last thing is that it's important to remind yourself when you're having, this is just true in mental health in general, you're feeling like overwhelmed and anxious. If you are feeling really overwhelmed and anxious, you should speak to somebody, a professional, psychologist, social worker. That's A. But B, it's important to remind yourself that however it is that you're feeling, it's not, you're not going to feel that way forever. And it's a very helpful thing to remind yourself of. This isn't going to be forever. I'm not going to feel this way forever. I feel this way right now, but this is going to, I guess Chazal say, Gamze Yavo, right? It's going to pass. But that's another thing to remind yourself, and it's a nice way to kind of help yourself take a deep breath and move forward.
Any other questions?
I have a question.
What's up?
Baruch Hashem. What's your favorite Masechta Rabbeinu Mishnayos wise? Would it be the Indian or the Kiyas? What's your favorite Mishnayos? I've finished Shas class once already. I'm going to say time around. I don't know Rabbeinu per se. What's your favorite Masechta Mishnayos? This is the thing, Kalayim is the hard Masechta. What's your favorite Masechta Mishnayos? Both of you.
I guess perhaps the most practical one would be Avos. Especially now we're between, we're in the summer months, we're going through Masechta's Avos. So. Learn it
b'iyun.
So that's a very good question.
I'll call it your answer.
It's the same answer.
Okay.
And it's underrated Musa Sefer. Revolvi writes this. Pirkei Avos with Rashi, the Rambam, and Rabbeinu Yonah. I think he just says Pirkei Avos and Rabbeinu Yonah. That's one of the four things he puts as something every Ben Torah. You should work at Yeshiva. You should have learned through. I know we all go through Pirkei Avos. Right, but. Is very kimmel, very valid. Right, it's actually very. We laugh at it because everyone talks about it like that. Pirkei Avos is an amazing, amazing Musa Sefer.
I follow up then. Is prayer well also considered Pirkei Avos? Is it a Tosaf that we should include that then? Pirkei Avos numerous times.
Be machmer.
Okay.
Be machmer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, like there are a lot of like worldwide initiatives, I guess, in terms of accomplishing goals and. On the Torah, whether it's Af Yom or Yom Yom, or even like more personally, like Shabbat Mikra, how could we, I guess, have a similar type of approach to, I guess, the Oras Avidos in terms of having that regimen, in terms of making it more like there?
And so you want to know that how much focus should we have on that? We have all these various learning programs, you want to know as to. Where does midos fit into those? Like, where do we have time to work on our midos?
Yeah.
So,
how to have that,
what?
Or how to have that regimen in a similar way?
I mean, so the truth of the matter is there's really a couple of answers to that question. First is that just every yeshiva has a musar seder. You should have a musar seder. It's very, very important to have a Musar Seder. Secondly, all of those limudim that you're learning, there's so many opportunities to implant midos into your learning. In other words, we know that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva perished because Shalud Nagu Kavod Zem, that they didn't treat each other with respect. So what does that mean? It could be that one was saying a pshat and the other wasn't willing to listen. In other words, it's you can double dip. In other words, you can be learning Gemara and also be implementing Midos Tovos while you are learning Gemara. In other words, being married is you're literally implementing every second of every moment, implementing Midos, whether marriage or whether you're a parent. But when you're learning Chumash, Pirkei Avos is the second greatest Musar Sefer. The first is Chumash Rashi. In other words, just reading the Psukim and to learn the stories of the Avos, the Sefer HaYashar, and learning, it could be, every single parsha of every single parak in Chamisho Chumshei Torah, there is always a Musar idea in any single pasuk or parak in the Torah. So my point is that you can be Kayim Shneim. You can be learning Gemara and there's Musar on that daf, or you interact with your chavrusas. In Chumash, there's Musar. There's Musar when you're actually learning your Musar Seder. So I don't think it's a stra. I think that you incorporate Musar into all of your other limudim, and therefore you have your daf yomi or daf hashavua or your Mishnah Yomi, and you also have the opportunity to become a great person at it. I don't know if that answered the question.
Or you could have a Midosvah. Go to Revolve, it's Chelik Beit, it's that classic difference between me and you, right? Go to the second Chelik of Ali Shore. Yes. Is 10 Prakim on different Midos. It's created for guys to have vadim together, 3, 4, 5 guys together, and learn about a mida. It's a couple paragraphs. Make a time Thursday night, late, whatever it is, to sit with a chevra, group of 4 or 5 guys. One guy presents each week. You present about the mida you learn through Revolvi. There's homework to do for the next week, and you come back the next week. You can mamish, do it. It won't be yomi. Right? You probably wouldn't be healthy to do yomi because you need time to work on each midah. But that's a regimented way to go through midos. I think it's a wonderful thing to do. When I was here, there was a group of guys, a couple guys a year older than me, who did just that, and we did that. It was amazing. It was a great way to, in a regimented way, for those who like regiment, not for those who don't, but for those who like regiment, to do it in that way.
So earlier this year there was a Q&A with the Shidduchim and some of the YUNX. One of the questions that wasn't really answered was something that Bessemann spoke about in Sichas Musar about the picture, whether to have it or not. I guess my question is, if at least in my personal experience, speaking to like almost every Rebbe I spoke to said, like, no, you shouldn't have, like, there shouldn't be a picture. So why hasn't, like, YU really, like, come out saying, like, even, like, speaking to, like, the YU connects, saying that, like, we're not doing this anymore? Or, like, what, like I know it's common, but, they have, like, a summons against, like, anti-drinking or anti-other stuff. Like, why, like, if most of the YU spoke to YU come out saying that they don't want it, like, why can't it be, like, a formal, like, we're not going to do this instead of, like, unfortunately, like, a very good Sichas Musar, very, like, I took to heart, very, like, thought about it, but then people, then you go into, like, the YU, then, like advertisement, and they say, yes, pictures.
The answer is that at the end of the day, like, you know, when I came and I gave the Musar Shmuz, my expectation wasn't that, that now people were going to asser pictures. I just wanted to give a sensitivity that it shouldn't only be about pictures. There's somebody I know who, you know, very machbid on the looks and only the looks. So they once were reading a shidduch, and I just sent a picture. So they're calling back. They're like, I appreciate that. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, I know who I'm dealing with. I don't even bother sending the name or where they went to school. I just sent the picture. And you know how crazy this is? They went out with the person based on the picture.
Did they get married?
No, because then they went out with the guy, and I actually sent it to the, to the girl. In other words, the girl only looked at the picture, meaning her family. So I sent it to the mother. At least I sent a picture. So she sends me back. I think it was a text. She called me. She's like, "Rabbi Simon, you're brilliant, brilliant." So I'm like, "So you're gonna go out?" She's like, she looked at the picture again. Yes, it was the worst date ever. It was the worst date ever. They were so not compatible. But I didn't even bother telling her about anything else. Because that's what you're matching, that's what you're going to get. You know what I mean? So I just sent a picture. She's like, "Where everything else?" I'm like, "That's all I'm sending you. I don't want to waste my time. I have to press the send button to the resume. It's not worth it. What do you? Why do you need to know where they went to school? Why do you need to know what their aspirations are? Why do you need to know like where they're from? Or why do you need to know if they have any friends? Like, as long as you have the picture, that's all that matters." But no, that's actually what I told the mother. She's like, "You're right, okay." But the truth of the matter is I was just, you should be sensitive to the idea that it's such Nairishkeit that's what you're basing your decision as to whether you're going to go out with this person based upon the picture. And so I just wanted to create that it should be. You know, look, I understand. In Mirtz Hashem, I hope that for my son, whenever he starts to date, I will not. And this also is for my other children as well. I will not ask for a picture, and I've proven that I've not asked for a picture. So, because I don't want that to look. You know, this is something that's been spread. Eyes are, you know, beauty's in the eyes of the beholder. Everybody has a different appreciation as to what's beautiful. So, at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who's Meshadech Shiduchim. And when parents come to me and they say, "How am I going to find my daughter's Shidduch?" I say to them, "Well, the same way that you found your Shidduch, and the same way that I found my Shidduch, and the same way that he found his Shidduch, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the greatest Shadchan." So that's what it is. We have to be bechazik ourselves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a Shidduch for everyone. So, Mirtz Hashem. Everyone has their Zivuk, right? The Baskel comes out. Harbaim Yom Kodem to birth. And Mirtz Hashem. So we just have to, it's like a Metzia. We just have to go and find it. So that we need to be mechazik, like Rabbi Kron said, we've seen mechazik our emunah. That it's Kodesh Baruch who's going to arrange everything.
I think also just to address your specific point, it's true. There's a larger infrastructure here, you know, at play. And that, you know, a little bit, we got to leave to infrastructure people to deal with that. And I think it's a fair question. I think your question is a good question. For us, as we're cement, it's about objectification of people. That's what happens, right? Because, and it happens especially a bigger new time for guys. Because guys, for whatever reason, get so many ideas, and girls get many fewer. It becomes an objectification of. We talk about it all the time, right? We think it's disgusting that the secular world turns women into objects, right? Well, when I have six resumes and I'm rifling through pictures, that's where it becomes. Right? What am I doing? Right, so it's less about like whether they should send it or shouldn't send it. Okay, fine, whatever. But it's more about what does it mean for my midos? Right, what is it doing to me when that's happening to me? Right, so there's ways to deal with that. And I talk to guys about that all the time. Take one idea at a time. Decide it for you, not for you. Next, that has nothing to do with the picture. Not about the picture. You have 30 resumes. It's the same yachi objectification of somebody else. Right, which one am I gonna? Right, choose, right, from my all the opportunities that are there for me. Right, it's like yachi. What are we doing? Who am I? Starts with that first kasha, first question about anivas a little bit. Right, I think that's really the point. It's about my midos. How what is this whole process doing to my midos, and how can I, for myself, decide that I'm not going to let that happen to me, which I think is important.
Okay.
Okay.
Great job, guys.
Thank you so much.
Great job. Thank you.